listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And good evening to you for Wednesday, October 22nd, 2014. I'm Dr. Doug Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening. Good evening. Glad to be here.
Yes, I don't know if we got a late start or not. We're having some technical difficulties with Blog Talk Radio. Nothing new. But anyway, welcome to Metaphysical Universe. It's good to have you here. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly service of the International Society of Metaphysical Humanism, where we discuss spirituality and science and power the human spirit. Our shows now are made up of two segments, or two parts, if you will. The first part is on spirituality, personal growth, that sort of thing. The second part we're devoting to science, the paranormal, mysterious things like that. And so tonight's show, we're going to be talking about living up to your potential. In our first part, we're going to talk about life in the universe on the second part. And, of course, Michael Kelly is usually with us with the switchboard, but he is under the weather tonight, so he will not be with us. If you want to call in, you're more than welcome to. We'll try to take a call if we can, but we may not be able to, but we'll try. And, of course, you can ask questions or make comments in the chat room for those of you who are listening to the live program. And we also welcome those who are listening to the archive. Now, joining us tonight, kind of in a little bit of an impromptu, is my good friend Grant Rubendus. Hell, he might be my only friend. I don't...
I'm your friend. Glad you're here, Grant.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here with you guys and, you know, to be able to participate. I always enjoy it, but a lot of times schedule doesn't permit it. So I'm here and I'm looking forward to talking with everybody. You got some great topics tonight.
Now, Grant is a licensed mental health counselor. What's the designation again, LCSW?
It's LMHC.
Oh, I wasn't even close. Had the L right. I should know that by now, since you're my only friend. Not really, though. But anyway, Grant, it's always good to have you, Grant. Grant and I go way back when we did Paranexus Universe for 3 years and a gazillion shows on that program. And he's going to join in our discussion tonight. So let's get into it. Tonight I'm going to forgo the usual profession of beliefs because we're, you know, a little bit late and we don't have a lot of time. And, you know, if you remember nothing else, remember this. Do no harm, do right. All right, so... That's kind of the long and the short of it right there. So let's talk about living up to your full potential. The term actually came from one of my students, John Jang, and he used an expression about living in the shadow of one's potential, and it's a takeoff of a quote that my dad made that I only found out about after he passed away. Saw it scribbled on a piece of paper in his notes. And he wrote that we ought not live in the shadow of our worst moments. And that, so it's related, you know, not living in the shadow of your full potential. And so many people live in the shadow of their true potential. And one of the things that's at the heart of that is fear. And, you know, the negative self-talk. I'm not smart enough. I'm not edumacated enough. I'm not this. I'm not that. It'll never work. And so many people basically... you know, disable themselves before they even get started. Anybody have a comment?
And they do that without necessarily any experience that could give them a file for that. You know, and I've seen that a lot, actually, where people are fearful of something, but they have no reason to be. It's just doing a lot of comparatives, I think, and, you know, comparing themselves to the world, but they don't necessarily have... like 14 failures to say, oh, I'll fail the next time, you know, so, and then how to break the patterns, of course. So that's really an observation I see. What do you see often, Grant?
Well, I think that you guys are both pretty much on target. You can't create barriers you know. And a lot of times with that negative self-talk, you know, it's easy to create barriers based on some of the old tapes we play, because we all hear things from our parents and from kids and school.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that stuff's hard to get away from. But nonetheless, you know, I think part of the way that you overcome that is by being conscious of it. And, you know, occasionally give yourself a pat on the back and go, it's okay, I'm human. That's a big part of
Amen.
It as well.
Yeah, excellent point.
But I see that a lot, you know, where people will come in, Vicki, much like you say, and be completely convinced that, you know, they don't have any options. And many times it's easy to get them to see that they do have a tremendous amount of potential. They just have to tap into it. And it's, as you guys both know, helping them find the way to get there.
What steps do you attempt to employ first when you're helping your clients, Grant?
Well, I like to let them, I try to let them think for themselves. I always used to like it when people would come in when I worked for the state years ago, and they would say to me, because I helped with career counseling, and they would say, you know, I need help. I really like to change my career field. And, you know, after we did a few basics, I say, okay, well, what do you want to do? And they would go, well, I don't know. And I would go, I would kind of tease it out of them after a while. And some people, you know, most of the time they were on target and they just didn't know how to go about reaching that goal. They didn't know what steps to take. And you know, a lot of times, one of the biggest hindrances was fear. Fear of the unknown, a lot of times.
Yeah.
And let's talk about fear of the unknown. You know, what's at the root? Fear is kind of like an onion. You peel layers away. What's at the root of fear? You know, it's losing control. You know, we may not be able to control this, so we fear it. And a lot of times fears are, well, usually fears are irrational in nature. They're based on your real, not real real. And so we have to get to the source of that and understand why we might be afraid of something. Try to figure that out.
Well, you know, go ahead, Vicki.
So, well, I was going to say, don't you think, too, that it has something to do with being trained at a very early age that you can't do something you enjoy, that you have to do something, you know, to earn a living? You know, and be serious and realistic and down to earth and practical, and no, you can't be a dancer or an artist or, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I think that's going to dovetail perfectly with what I was going to say, you know, and I'm not going to hit the school books here. But one of the guys I always liked was Alfred Adler. And Adler said that one of the things that we do, through children is we learn to feel inferior, because think of how small we are in the adult world and how anything that can be said can shrink us even more. And so the real battle for self-actualization is overcoming your own kind of initial feelings of inferiority, because it's going to, you have got to climb a mountain a little bit at a time.
Big one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it goes back to your self-concept, which is one of the things that we teach at the Metaphysics Institute, and all of our courses are based on empowering people. All of our principles of belief, you know, the whole spiritual philosophy behind metaphysical humanism is on empowering the person, helping people to stand on their own two feet. And one of the things I wanted to do with this part of the program is to give an example, a case study, a story, if you will, about my own experience, you know, and I'm coming from the standpoint where we don't reach our true potential because we don't believe we can. And so it's really a mindset, it's an attitude, and it's an attitude of how hard can it be. And one of the things I tell students and clients, and you know, I don't want to hear all the reasons why you can't do it. I want to hear all the reasons why you can do it. And this is an attitude, I think, that I inherited from my mentor, Sal Valderrama, who now lives here in Florida, not far from me. But I, you know, 35 years ago, this man made a huge difference in my life as a 16-year-old. In fact, it's probably more than 35 years now. But anyway, you know, he made a huge difference. He had a little taco place in Denver. And in fact, it was named the taco place. And and I worked there, you know, quickly became assistant manager, and we quickly became great friends. He's about 11 years older than me, and I learned so much from this guy. 27 he was. Now I look back on a 27-year-old. Wow, they're just a kid. But, you know, Sal, he was a smart guy. In fact, he played pro ball with the Kansas City Royals prior to that. And so I learned so much from him. But the point, the thing that I observed with Sal is that he just did. His bent was forward. And he was one of those guys where it seemed like everything he touched turned to success. And it was just because of his relentless forward-moving attitude. So I observed this. I was impressed with this. And then just watching him walk, again, he had a forward bent. He walked with determination. He walked with direction. He walked like he knew where he was going. And, of course, he was very self-confident, too, and he knew who he was, self-possessed. So I carried away this attitude as a teenager into my 20s, my 30s. And so when I started businesses, I remember when I started my office equipment dealership, I was about 31, and so it was like 6 years ago. And
yeah.
What, you don't believe that?
No, it's okay, Doug. Yeah. Keep going. You're on a roll.
I want to include you in my illusion.
Delusion.
Yeah. So, I started out as a technician, went to, you know, school and became an electronic technician, got a job as an office equipment tech, and did that for 7 years, went into sales for a year and a half, did pretty good at that, and decided I want to do my own thing. Well, you have to understand that in my mindset, I was a technician and then I was a salesman. I was not a dealer principal. I was not an owner. It was a whole different level for me. And I had been to the conventions and the conferences, and I had seen, you know, I've been in the same, you know, classes that they have at these places with owners and with people who were up there, so to speak, and from my estimation at that time, my perspective. And so when I started contemplating doing this, you know, I was a little bit afraid, you know, can I do this? And the thing is, I didn't let that hold me back. Yeah, there were times when I didn't know whether I could pull it off or not, but I didn't hold it back. I was going to die trying, so to speak. And so I did, and I moved forward, and I did a good job, and I later sold the company and moved to Florida. That was like 17 years ago. So that set the precedent, and from that point on, I knew I could do anything I wanted. And so initially starting out, living up to what you want to do, don't let any kind of fear hold you back. You have to have that can-do, will-do, how-hard-can-it-be kind of an attitude. And if I didn't have that attitude, we wouldn't be talking here tonight. The school wouldn't exist. Metaphysical humanism wouldn't exist. Everything we've done over the last 4 or 5 years would not exist because, you know, I wouldn't have done it. So,
but I think it also takes a certain drive.
It does.
Don't you think, though, too, a certain discipline and a drive beyond just earning a living? And
oh, yeah.
To be honest, I think that for a lot of people, it's the forward movement is just being able to eat. You know, it's like, okay, I have to get a job. And I think a lot of people do is just get the first job that comes along instead of, you know, kind of looking at their options and what they're best suited for, or better yet, what job is suited to them, that there's a partnership. So it's, you know, not everybody's going to be able to go out and, you know, start a company. Although I will say that I think, especially in North America, there are more people having their own businesses out of necessity, too. If you can't get a job, you go create one. So I think that, you know, it's mm-hmm. out of necessity, you find the drive also.
Yeah, you know, no doubt about it. You know, and if I just go back to the inferiority thing, one of the points I wanted to make about that was, remember, everybody, you know, remember that we are all human. And so you're coming from a point, it doesn't matter whether you really embrace Adler, but it makes a lot of sense to some degree. But we're all coming from feelings of inferiority, okay? And I think it was Eleanor Roosevelt that said, nobody can make you feel inferior unless you let them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't let yourself be one of those people.
Amen.
And remember, you just got to just keep pushing through, like Doug was talking about and Vicky's talked about. It's always, you know, you can draw a comparison between us and salmon, you know, that are swimming upstream, and that's the nature of the universe. You know, life is a struggle, and it's about, you know, finding the best and the strongest qualities and attributes that you have so that you can talk like the title of the show, fulfill your potential, but also, you know, be prepared for the bumps and the turns and the twists that are going to come up and know how to weather them.
You know, I think that the inferiority complex is a big one. But for me, I came from another point of view. It's nothing would pee me off more than somebody telling me no. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't like anybody telling me you can't do that. You can't change a tire. You can't change the oil. You can't fix a truck. You can't get a job to do that. You can't become this. You can't become a writer. Are you crazy? And, well, if you want something bad enough, you just go do it. But there is that comparative that we're doing, you know, and again, we all come from some measure of reality that says those people are greater, smarter, or more, which we create then our own separation from our potential to be who we are and just forget about comparing. If anything, it's just to look around at who sets a good example, you know, the examples.
And let me build on that because, and this is apropos for many of our students, because I've gotten feedback from many of our students. When they start out the IMHS degree program, you know, it's metaphysics, and it's different. And a lot of people don't understand exactly what it is. It's nothing more or less than consciousness and existence. It's living a better life. But they don't know that. They think it might be something with the, the occult and things like that. They don't understand. And they will then begin to put the person down in many ways. Oh, you know, that sounds hard. You can't do that. You know, it's not a real degree. And they start giving them the right act. And what they're doing is they're basically imposing their own inferiority on you if you're a student who's listening to this stuff. And you can't live your life based on somebody else's perceptions, based on somebody else's beliefs. You have to live your life based on your own beliefs and walk your own path. It may not be for them. And if they're giving you that kind of stuff, then it certainly isn't for them. But that doesn't mean it's not for you. And so, again, a lot of students come into this, can I do it? They've given me feedback. They didn't know whether they could do it. They get into the first course, oh, wow, this is kind of hard. And then they push through it. And they get to the second course, and then they really get on fire. And they're, oh, wow, this is great stuff. And they're going through it, and they're cooking, and they're doing great. But they had to prove that to themselves, so to speak. So if you're one of our students who are having a challenge, you don't know if you can do this, you can do it. But you've got to believe in you. And if you can't believe in you, as Les Brown once said, believe in me who believes in you. Because this is not rocket science. It takes some effort. But you can do it if you want to. Don't let anybody else kill your dreams, your goals. They're yours.
And remember, you know, that one of the things that successful people or people with drive fear the very most is failure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And failure tempers your character. Okay? It tempers everybody's character because I guarantee you, you will experience it. You will experience all the range of emotions. But, you know, don't be afraid because you can't control those things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the nature of life is you plow ahead with it. You just have to.
All right. So live up to your full potential. Don't live in the shadow of your full potential because if you do, when you get to the end of your days and you're on your deathbed, you will have a bad case of the woulda, coulda, shoulda, the if onlys, and the might have beens. You will look back and say, you know what, I thought that was such a big deal back then. In retrospect, it was nothing, and I gave it way too much energy. I gave it too much focus. I took myself way too seriously. And if I had to do it over again, I'd just go and I would attack that with all I had. That's the kind of attitude you need to have now so that you can live up to your full potential. All right,
if I can just inject too, it doesn't mean that you have to go and be a big executive. It doesn't mean that you have to be a movie star and famous. It doesn't mean any of those things. It just means what the individual aspires to for themselves. It's not measured by a level. It's measured by an inner fulfillment.
and living your dream, whatever that is for you. Your dream is neither better nor worse than anyone else's dream. Some people's dream might be to be a celebrity or to do this or that. That doesn't make it more important or more glamorous or more anything. It just makes it theirs, and it makes yours yours. So good points. I appreciate the input. All right, let's shift gears now. Let's get onto our second portion, which is...
Yeah, let's talk about aliens.
About life in the universe. Okay, and I'll just start the discussion off and we can see where it goes. The reason that I chose this to talk about tonight is because here we are on planet Earth, right? And we've got our problems. You just watch the news, and everybody's got problems, and there's so much going on, and people are killing people, and there's tribal warfare and all this other stuff going on, and we begin to take ourselves so seriously. We begin to get tunnel vision, narrow vision, thinking that, you know, it's all about us, and it's not all about us, and it's not all about them. It's about all of us, and we need to zoom out and understand that this is one tiny planet. Doesn't make it insignificant, though, but it is still one tiny planet in a vast, vast, vast universes, perhaps. And there are the potential for trillions, and very likely, most likely, in fact, can almost say with definiteness, trillions of planets of sentient, sapient beings all living their lives and all different types. And so we have to zoom out and understand we're not alone. There's a vast universe here. There's a lot going on. And it kind of almost comes back to what are you doing to contribute to the whole, to live your dream, to make a positive difference. But that's all I'll get into on that part. So,
well, you're assuming that people agree that there are, you know, there is life elsewhere beyond Earth. And I think that is the ultimate discussion about, you know, we talked earlier about being educated and opening our minds, and there is piles of evidence now that we are not alone in the universe. And what does that make us? Not so much insignificant, but more full of our own potential, which is that whole first show, part of the show tonight, and what we are capable of being and doing as a human species. If we, you know, have that deliberate intent and focus beyond this, you know, our little realities that are perpetuated by fear. So then, and then to me, if we can see it from a different point in the circle, we can expand our minds to know, you know what, we can't take all this too seriously because, you know, what's going on around us, we have to be who we are so that we can continue to evolve, because that, I think, is the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm. Grant, you've got to have thoughts on that.
Well, I know he's thinking over there.
Well,
he's
I think anybody, whether you're a scientist or whether you are religious, just by virtue of the fact of the sheer numbers out there, you have to go like, and the way that it just keeps getting wilder and wilder all the time, that it just has, life has to be ubiquitous everywhere, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think people also have to remind themselves of the fact that, you know, when you look at our galaxy, the Milky Way, we're out on the frontier. We're Alaska. We are so far out on the fringe of the galaxy that anybody that's coming here to visit with us is coming most of the time. I would guess, in some cases, maybe coming a long, long way. Well, then again, you got to remember too that within 40 light years it's either reverse, I can't remember now, but there's like so many planets within 40 light years that are close to this, that we can explore
stars.
When the time comes. Yeah, stars. Excuse, that's right, Doug, with planets. So I mean, and the Kepler just keeps seeming to find more and more.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's I forget the name because they're all coded. They don't have proper names, but there's they found an Earth-type, Earth-sized planet about 500 light years from here, and you know, just they're hard to find. I mean, planets like Earth don't give off light. They, you know, they're small. It's hard to track them, but Kepler is doing it, and I think they've got another telescope they're going to put up in a few years, right?
James Webb. James Webb Telescope, which will be much clearer, if everything goes without a hitch, will be much, much clearer. But, you know, one of the things I found fascinating, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with this too, is, you know, for years and years, you know, the astronomers said that, you know, red dwarf stars, they're useless, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in terms of the universe, they're pretty evenly spaced, more so than we've ever suspected.
Mm-hmm.
And what scientists are saying now, and quite a few of them are close to us, is that they could support life under some circumstances. So, wow, it gets wilder and wilder.
Well, they say that red dwarfs are what make up the most of stars.
Yes.
That's what most are. So if you think about it, and I don't know if our listeners, if you watch any of these documentaries, but space, you know, the universe and that sort of thing. But when you zoom out in the universe, and it's just unbelievably large, and who knows, you know, there's the many worlds theory where there's multiple universes. They, you know, having all kinds of different things going on. And who knows what's above that? You know, there's so much we don't know. But the beautiful thing is there's so much to explore. There's so much to fill your imagination with and to speculate about what could be. One thing is certain, though. There are just too many stars for Earth to be here all by itself. And if we go back a few centuries, you know, back in the Dark Ages, remember, you know, humanity's arrogance is unbelievable. But, you know, even Galileo was, you know, under house arrest because, hey, you know, the Earth is the center of everything. It's it. We're it. We're God's chosen planet, blah, blah, blah. And it's like little children, you know. They can only absorb so much as little toddlers. And as they grow up, they can absorb a little bit more. And they grow up more, they can absorb more. And then when they become adults, they usually can absorb even more and understand things in a complex way. Well, it's like Earth, you know, it's like our social structure. It's like the governments covering up alien visitations, you know, extraterrestrial crafts and all that stuff, because they're afraid it's just going to be anarchy and, you know, all society's going to collapse on and on. And yet that's part of the growing up process for humanity. We have to realize, and many people do, that we're not alone. This is not the only inhabited planet in the cosmos. It can't be. The sheer numbers, as Grant said, rule that out. The universe is teeming with life. We have to understand that.
Question would be, where do we fit in the scheme of things if we're all killing each other? So, you know, I mean, really. So if we just can check in with ourselves.
Pretty far down the food chain,
yeah,
I'd say. And, you know, the thing that's really sad about it is, you know, I've got this, in my old age, I've come to this conclusion that, you know, like much the same when man first set out on the oceans. And first they just made little tiny journeys, you know, and then eventually they crossed the ocean. What they found there was, you know, maybe the first time they're out there in a boat with oars, and then somebody figured out, hey, man, there's this free power. It's called the wind. Let's make a sail.
Mm-hmm.
And it sped up everything. And you know what? I just have this sneaking suspicion, guys, that what we're going to find is that we get a little bit more sophisticated, if technologically sophisticated, is that it's going to be all out there for us to tap into. Okay?
Great illustration.
It's going to be all out there for us to tap into, and all we have to do is get our act together. Now, one of the things that you guys have both spoken to tonight, I saw a documentary not too long ago, and it was all about how the astronauts who have been on the space station, who have been in the space shuttle, who have been in space, how every one of them, how that experience has changed their whole approach to how they view humanity and how they view the Earth. And that what they've come to the conclusion of is that it just makes you realize that we're all a community.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very moving thing. So don't you wish that we could just transport everybody up to orbit? Everybody, let's all hold hands and up we go.
Mm-hmm.
Because we could certainly use that, because nothing dissolves borders like being in orbit
and seeing no borders.
You know, I think I would like to remind everybody that there's always going to be a bad guy, that there's always going to be somebody with a mental illness or somebody who's not balanced or somebody who's behaving badly. It's what we do in our response to that recreates who we are and who we're growing into being as a better human being. And, you know, if we can just ask ourselves every day, and at the end of the day as I do, did I do something today that made me a better human being? Because in being a better human being, my mind is more open to more things. And then we're rising into our potential as an individual. That kind of connects with everybody else, and we understand the collective better. And it really does start with something like being nice to somebody. It really does.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sam.
I was just going to say, you know, I find it really easy. And sometimes years ago, in my younger days, when I, you know, you face the pressures of trying to support a family and you're working in a job that, you know, in a bureaucracy where you face a lot of frustrations, it wasn't quite so easy as it is now, as I'm a little bit older, to be so friendly, because I saw so much negativity, not so much from my clients, more so from working within the confines of the structure. But now, I've really, you know, and at the time, I guess I was oblivious to it. But now, what a difference, because I try to smile with everybody, you know, make compliment people, just go out of my way to be nice. And you know what? Do good. You know, do good. That's the bottom line. Yeah, you know, love your brother and realize, you know, sometimes, and I'm not going to get too long-winded on this, you're driving a car and somebody frustrates you, and I'm just as guilty as everybody else, you know. And I might curse up a blue streak, you know, like, you know, curse his ancestry or whatever. Doug, I hate to disappoint you. But you know what? As quickly as it comes, it goes. And then you know what I think to myself? I knock my head and I go, you know what? Genetically, that could be a fifth or sixth cousin that you just cursed up and down the line.
Or yourself.
Exactly, you know.
We've all done it.
You know, and the thing of it is that, you know, we all do that kind of stuff. And what we lose sight of is how closely we are related, regardless of skin color, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, genetically.
You know, speaking of which, I just watched a show, a Roots show on Ancestry, and Ben Affleck is, in fact, a 10th cousin to Matt Damon.
Really?
And best friends, and they didn't know that, but they are
yep.
tied back, 10th cousin removed. So like I say, whoa, that's wild. We
and
are related.
And the thing about that is look at the harmonics there, because those guys have collaborated and written
great,
like Goodwill Hunting.
Mm-hmm.
That was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant.
Well, 6 degrees of separation, right?
Yep.
I just watched another little documentary. This is really quick. A man who's in his 40s had been adopted, looking for his family, hired a guy, had him there for a month and a half. The guy, one day it clicked to him, he said, were you adopted? Yeah, I was. Well, is your mother this, and, you know, born that, when's your birthday? You're my brother. They've been working together for six
wow.
weeks.
Oh, my goodness. Talk about coincidence.
Synchronicity, huh?
Yeah,
wow.
Really. That's pretty wild.
And so these things, these are the things to wonder about. You know, look, I'm with everybody. It's an event today, and, you know, we already know the day. Where my daughter lives in Ottawa, Canada at the moment, and a huge big thing, Ottawa's on lockdown. She had been at that very location 2 minutes earlier before the soldier was shot, and it's caused everybody a tremendous amount of stress. And in debriefing, you know, here's the key about debriefing, is that this cannot hold us hostage to how we want to live our lives. And imagine the whole city is very fearful right now, and she's dealing with coworkers and, you know, on and on. So it's, you know, very close to home right now. And again, to remind people, this is not who we are. This is just what some people do.
Well, it's tragic what happened in Ottawa. You know, I have an affinity and affection for Canadians. I grew up across the river in Detroit from Canada, and I married a Canadian. So, you know, I know how Canadians view this, and, you know, and I'm going to say this, and I love my country, but you guys, it's just shocking what happened there, because you guys are much better.
Well, we've been we certainly have been insulated from a lot of this until recently, and the violence elsewhere. But we've also had an attitude, Grant, but it happens over there. And so now I can easily see how we're becoming contaminated by the fear that's permeating everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's part of that. That's part of the battle. You know, fear equals control. But, you know, in the situation, I didn't read a lot about it today. But, you know, several years ago, we had a Canadian soldier who was part of Paranexus. And he was a wonderful guy. He had done service in Bosnia and had been wounded in Bosnia, and he was damaged and a wonderful guy.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things he told me, and having been a veteran myself, you know, I knew that he was genuine, or I just really believed he was genuine in what he was telling us. And I think what it goes to show is Canada has stood shoulder to shoulder with the United States in many conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, their loyalty, their soldiers' loyalty has, you know, resulted in the same sort of circumstances that ours have. And, you know, it's tragic, but I think it's to almost be expected when you know, like somebody is not, and I can't speak for the healthcare system, but veterans are generally ignored. And, you know, if you do one or two tours of combat duty, you most definitely had post-traumatic stress syndrome. And the other thing you have to keep in consideration is when those IUDs went off, even if you were a mile away, you could suffer traumatic brain injury.
Wow.
Even in the mildest forms.
So what does that tell us again? You know, it's not about us. It's not about them. It's about all of us working together, going back up, zooming out to orbit, and looking down and realizing, yeah, people are going to have different opinions, different beliefs, different perspectives. The bottom line of all of it is do no harm, do right. You want to believe in your gods and your religion and all that stuff? Fine, do harm. Don't harm, you know, women. Don't harm other people. You know, let's stop killing each other and let's start helping each other.
Let's evolve.
By
all means.
That's a great expression. Let's evolve. That'd make a good bumper
sticker. And the thing is, by all means, is take your curiosity and the energy that you have by going to school or pursuing your bliss, you know, and take it and, you know, and embrace the diversity of the people around you, because once you open your mind to what those people and those cultures and their differences can do for you, it's going to open a whole new world. And you'll realize, I mean, you already, probably most folks here already do, but if you don't, you owe it to yourself to see that everybody's the same. Just, and vive la différence.
Yeah.
You know, there's two things that I drilled into my kids, and I now have opportunity to pass it along to my grandkids, is saying, you are a spirit having a human experience. That's number one. Number two is that you are a free, sovereign being of the universe. Your individuality comes before allegiance to anyone or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget that.
Good points. We got about 5 minutes left or so, and I want to give an update on what I've been doing with the physical location that I started. Just to reiterate, a couple, 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago now, I got it in my head that it was time to start a brick-and-mortar location for the Society of Metaphysical Humanism, not so much as a headquarters or anything, but as a metaphysical, quote, church, unquote.
And I didn't see any brick.
Well, actually, there is.
Is there?
It's hidden. Anyway.
Throw it in there.
I leased a unit here in Northport, Florida, and we're getting it ready. The guys, contractors were in today, removing some walls. I had some offices in it. We removed a couple of the offices to open it up for seating and all that, and got a nice monitor. And I'm going to be writing about all this stuff, too. In fact, a lot of this is going to go into course M15 on starting a metaphysics practice or a ministry in the degree program. But I'm going to also create a page to keep everybody kind of updated on what's going on. But the point of this is going to be to do weekly services similar to what we're doing on the radio program, but with the people in the local area, whoever wants to join in. And also to do training classes in terms of practical life skills, relationships, communication, paranormal courses, things like that. you know, it's one of those things. It was time. I mean, after almost 5 years of having an online school with hundreds of students around the world, it was time to start this next phase. And this is kind of coincides with what we were talking about at the outset, about living up to your true potential. You know, it's always been my dream to have a training center. And, of course, my macro dream was, you know, tied to a hotel and have meeting rooms and basically a center where people could come to reboot. Well, this is the first step in that whole process. Now, it's a 1,000-square-foot building. It's actually part of a very nice upscale plaza. And it's going to be cool because I've got a monitor. I get a 50-inch monitor I was able to get used off of Craigslist. In fact, a lot of it I was able to, most of us able to do very inexpensively, relatively inexpensively from just getting some good use stuff. But we're going to also be able to feature speakers via Skype to address people on different topics. And it will just be a center for human empowerment, for, you know, helping grow, to evolve. Let's evolve, as Vicky says. So I'm excited about it. I hope to have, I'm kind of tentatively looking at the 1st of December to start having a weekly service and start scheduling some training classes, and we'll see where it goes. You know, it's like anything. I can't tell the future. Don't tell anybody because they all think I can. But I can't tell the future. So I don't know. You know, you throw it on the wall and see if it sticks. And that's what I'm doing. I'm putting it out there, and I'm going to go with it. And we'll see where it goes. I have this feeling it's going to go nicely. And then what it's going to do is lay the foundation for satellite groups and for graduates of the degree program who want to start a local satellite ministry, metaphysical humanism. We'll be able to develop the program, see what works, see what doesn't work. Because, you know, there's a lot of departures from the norm. And I say the norm because it's so widespread is the word I want, in terms of Christian churches and so forth. Can't use all the same terms. I mean, it's not quite the same. So we have to basically reinvent the wheel on a lot of things here. So that's kind of where we're at with it. And I wanted to give an update. I've taken some pictures, and I'll post those. And once I get the page done, I'll share the link with everyone.
And maybe in the next year or two, we'll actually have a live graduation where people will be able to attend. So
yeah.
But meanwhile, we do have our graduation coming up in December.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Our online graduation. So
in fact, it's 44 days, 18 hours, 18 minutes, 44 seconds. So I have a timer on the students.
Wow, congratulations to all those students. That's a pretty good feeling.
Yeah, it's
worked hard. You deserved it. So give yourself a great big pat on the back.
And if you are a student who has not graduated with your current degree, or you can always graduate with the next higher degree, you got 44 days, and go to the Student Center at metaphysicsinstitute.org to register for that. You just have to register so we know that you want to be included as a participant in the online graduation. So,
thanks for being with us, Grant. This has been great to have you back.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, you know, and I enjoy it. And, you know, and Doug, I'll be down there and do whatever I can to give you a hand.
Yeah.
You know, we've come a long way together, so, you know.
it's been a long time.
It has. It's been fun. So invite me back again. You know, I always like to
talk. You're always welcome.
Thanks.
All right. We'll see you Friday, and thanks so much for being here. And to everyone else, we appreciate your time. You know, what more can we say? You know, if you've got ideas for shows, let us know. Talk about it. We appreciate you. Cheers, everybody. Till next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and really, really live. Live up to your potential. Good night.
Good night.